Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Ricky Anger. Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 140 for February 5th, 2013. I'm Ricky Anger.
I'm Lisa Salinger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp.
You are Joe Steinkamp. You've been Joe Steinkamp several times, actually. And perhaps we'll talk about that a bit later regarding the 2012 outtakes.
This is true, but you know, we actually should mention something up front. We had one of those moments where Jamie asked us all sorts of words about 2012 and what we should think about 2012 and what did we predict for 2012. And one of those was about researching, BlackBerry, because there is no research in motion anymore. RIM really is dead. Long live the BlackBerry.
See, I was right. RIM is dead.
Yep.
And they are now BlackBerry.
You called it. You called it. But yep. I also called it an optimistic because they have released their new handset and BlackBerry 10 operating system.
They simply bowed to our greatness, you see, because now we have the only RIM. A far better RIM.
That's true. Remote Incidents Manager. You can actually find out a lot about that on our brand new website, serotech.com. Go check that out. It's really cool. But Research in Motion pulled one of those brand rebranding things and said, you know what? We think we should just call ourselves BlackBerry because that's what we're known for. And here's a bunch of really cool handsets. One touch device, one with a keyboard, which is getting actually pretty nice reviews on Ars Technica and other places for those who really like keyboards or have stayed with the BlackBerry for said keyboard. 15,000 apps and growing. They leaned a lot on video and movies and music. There actually is a lot of media play here, and they've been working with lots of studios to be able to have that, like next day release, like a DVD comes out and then you can get it up on their store kind of thing. Also, they're going to backport BlackBerry 10, the new operating system, to even things like the Playbook. So they've made a commitment to a lot of their older devices that a lot of the new apps and a lot of the new shiny parts of the BlackBerry operating system, and there are lots of new shiny parts to it, get to come to older devices. So many people are speculating that this may not win over new converts, but it may stem the tide of those trying to leave because now BlackBerry has the newest operating system out there. What do we think?
Well, it's really hard to say, but I did enjoy reading a couple of reviews of the Z10, and the upshot is this isn't horrible, but it's not spectacular either. So essentially, BlackBerry has fixed a lot of the things that were wrong. They have decent hardware, although it's really not necessarily about the hardware. It's about the operating system because it's not going to be just these two devices that will have BlackBerry 10. So a lot of what we care about is the operating system itself. And there are some kind of weird quirks with it, strange gesturing that's not immediately intuitive, but once you get it, it's okay, and it, you know, it sort of makes sense. They're not particularly happy about the way BlackBerry does notifications, I suppose. You have Twitter and email and messages and so on, and BlackBerry is treating tweets as email, so you would actually have to open the tweet to read the mention in its entirety, and that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But they have made a lot of improvements in the web browser, which, thank goodness, that was one of the big kind of complaints about BlackBerry or RIM for years, is that web browsing, not so much fun. But they've based this one on WebKit, and it appears to be working pretty nicely. Again, the upshot of a lot of these articles is that nothing to complain about, but nothing to make you jump up and say, I gotta have one of these right now.
And Stuart Lawler is already sort of playing with these newer devices. He's kind of the go-to guy right now for BlackBerry accessibility, as you've heard on this very podcast. And so we'll be interested to see what happens. It's way too new and way too soon for us to get any good ideas on what access comes with these new devices or the new BlackBerry operating system. But it does kind of give me some pause that they did think about that and that they were really into it. And I'm kind of excited about that for those who are still in the BlackBerry ecosystem. So whether this turns out to be a good thing for the formerly known as RIM company, BlackBerry is going to be something very interesting to see. The carriers are all for it. We've got an article here that talks about it. They're looking for the third player, whether that be Firefox OS phone, whether that be Windows Phone 8, whether that be BlackBerry. What the carriers like is the ability to have choice. They also like anything that'll allow them to put bloatware on phones because they can't really do that with Apple. So that can sometimes be something that the carriers really, 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 really want is another operating system that they can kind of have their fingers in as well.
So who hates CAPTCHAs?
We do, we do.
Be aggressive. Oh, wait, wait. No, I'm sorry. You're cheerleading, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. We have spirit. Yes, we do. Spartan spirit. How about you? Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'll be good. I'll be good. Sorry. Go ahead.
Ticketmaster hates CAPTCHAs, too. They are finally dumping this system in favor of something that makes a lot more sense. And I read the comments on the article, which, like Buddy, they always tend to raise my blood pressure, but unlike Buddy, I do it anyway. This time, though, the comments were actually pretty positive. It's not just the blind community, and we've said this before, it's not just the blind community who hates CAPTCHAs. It's humans in general. You know, the reason that CAPTCHA was made in the first place was to help the humans and get rid of the robots, and the humans still hate it. So I don't know exactly which model Ticketmaster is using, but a couple of models that make sense were discussed. For example, a very, very simple one, and I can't see any accessibility challenges with this one right off. If you are a human, type the word owl or something like that.
Yeah, that was great. It made sense. It was like, you just wanted to say, is there a reason you didn't think of this years ago? I mean, it really is very simple.
Exactly. And what I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around is, why don't robots, or why can't robots break a very simplistic system like that? I find it fascinating that they can't. At the same time, I want to see more simplistic systems like this be put in place. I've seen some where it's like, enter what's 3 plus 2, and I've seen others, which I have a lot of concerns with, of course, where you have a picture of a bunch of red cars and there's a blue car and you have to click on the blue car. Let's not do that, okay?
Yeah. The only thing that I can figure, because I was wondering about this too, is if there are a few sentences of text, maybe it can't grab the relevant sentence out of context.
Yeah, or the concept. Like, what are you asking? Yeah, that makes
right.
sense.
Right. Because, you know, you have spam bots that can get email addresses off of websites. Well, they're looking for specific syntax and things like that, where this could vary widely, you know, with sentences. But yeah, I know a few sighted people, too, who will be very happy to see these go away. A sighted friend whom I had asked for help deciphering a few CAPTCHAs was convinced that they were implemented to make people go cross-eyed. Because apparently they're wavy, they're distorted, they're hard, you know, in some cases they're hard to see.
On purpose.
And the audio CAPTCHAs sometimes are no better. I mean,
On purpose.
Happy. Yeah, I'm happy if I can get one in one or two tries.
Well, remember that it has to be something that is not easily scrapable, you know, because a bot can turn around and imitate that.
But it's not easy for a human either, and that's problematic.
Well, that's the whole point of it is, you know, the whole point of the
Keep
Turing test.
Keep out everyone?
Yes. Yes, the Turing test. Now, what we're looking at is three-factor authentication at some point. Steve Gibson talks about this a lot on Security Now, where you have something you know, something you are, and something that you can prove. And that's kind of a layman's way of putting it. He's actually had an entire 2-hour-long podcast dedicated to explaining this in much better and more accurate ways. But what you were talking about last week is with Google is kind of what's coming. You know, you're going to have something biometric to yourself, be it a ring, a phone, or something, then you're still going to have to enter in some type of password because it's something you know. And then it's going to be able to ask you questions about your history because it knows something about you. And that's, again, not foolproof, but it's certainly one step closer to being able to show that you are you. The downside about that is that, you know, services and security will know more about you. And that can be kind of daunting, but, you know, this is the fun that we get for being internet brave citizens in the new world. And if you really, really freak out about that, don't read the book Demon by Daniel Suarez or Freedom.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be
but
bad.
But you really should read them.
They're great books. Just
I have them
don't
on my
freak
list.
Out too much.
They were recommended in another podcast, and I just haven't gotten there yet, but they are on my list. One I did read was the book, I can't remember the name of it now, Buddy recommended it. It was by Kevin Mitnick, and that was fantastic.
Ah, yes, we have talked about that on this podcast before as well.
The name eludes me.
Yeah, he has several, actually. So if you just do a search for Kevin Mitnick, there are quite a few, one of which was released just before he went to jail, I think, or perhaps in the very early days of that. Crackdown was one of them, I believe, and a couple of others as well.
What you can't do in jail if you are arrested for said such thing is write documents. Well, you could, but it'll have to be pen and paper. You certainly wouldn't be using Office 2013, would you?
You might if the prison subscribes to the Office 2013 subscription model.
I don't think you'd be able to save in the cloud on SkyDrive. That might be a problem. And that's one of the features within Office 2013 is SkyDrive integration. Also, which is really exciting, is a more affordable way of purchasing Office. You can actually get Office for $99 a year or pay for it monthly and be able to get the abilities of Office 2013 onto five computers at this time, be that Windows, be that Macs. What have you, you're able to actually use that through Office 365 Premium. Now, let me refer you over to our show notes at serotalk.com. You will find a link there to Windows Weekly from the Twit Network, who spends a good 35 minutes going through all the features and all the possibilities of you being able to purchase the new Office 2013. Suffice it to say, if you want a DVD copy, well, you're kind of out of luck because actually when you buy it in the stores, you're actually getting a little card with the product key and a link to go download it elsewhere. Microsoft is really pushing people to download and do that kind of storage. And they're really pushing people to think of Office 365 in this method because, as we've talked about before, you actually can use Office on the go. You can actually, through Office 365, be able to stream copies of Word and like that to another PC, even if it already has an existing copy of, say, Office 2007, which I think is really interesting. So there's a lot to this. We won't go into it in too much detail here, but check out the show notes for the link for Windows Weekly because they spend a lot of time explaining all the features, what comes in it, what's different. The bigger thing also, before I kind of sort of stop talking about Office, if you go for the Home and Student Edition, there is no Outlook. You'll have to go to Outlook.com, and that's a big change as well.
I do want to say one thing about this before we move on. Well, two things, actually. One of the big features is that you can hide the ribbon until you need it again. So if you just desperately hate the ribbon, you can hide that and then get it back when you need it. But the other thing I wanted to talk about was the subscription model. And I think this is an interesting move for Microsoft. And I think it's a very smart move also. It's just that people are still a little bit leery of doing this. But to me, it makes a lot of sense to be able to pay for something yearly and know you don't own it outright, but also know you don't have to be concerned about buying an upgrade for it and buying updates for it. And, you know, do I have the rights to upgrade to this version? Do I have the rights to install this service pack and blah, blah, blah? With the subscription-based model, you don't really have to worry about that. You're paying for access to the software, access to the cloud. So you don't own it per se, but at the end of the day, does that really matter? And I think that's a discussion that's going to continue to happen as time goes on and more businesses want to embrace this model. How about Windows 8? Let's talk about that. We're not to a subscription-based model there, but...
Yet.
Yet, exactly.
Yet. All signs point to yes as the magic 8-ball, the magic Windows 8-ball. Ooh, I see something I have to do. The magic Windows 8-ball says that... you know, all signs could go to that. I've heard this before, actually. They've talked about it again on Windows Weekly about a possible subscription-based version of Windows or a low-cost Windows. There's even a rumor that the upcoming Windows Blue, it's a Project Blue, which is another Windows code name slated for June or July, could either be that or Windows on a Surface RT that actually would be in a 7-inch form factor. Of course, they've got to actually sell the actual Windows RT units first. Yeah. Reports are coming in that Microsoft has sold about 900,000 of the initial shipment of the Surface RTs. Now, that's not surprising. What you're not going to see in articles is that the numbers are low because they were sold in Microsoft stores. We've talked about it on this podcast about how you could only find them in certain places. So naturally, if you're only available in certain places or certain online retail or something like that, you're not going to sell a whole bunch as if you were at Best Buy, Target, Walmart, XX, and Y. The Surface RT is actually coming to those stores. The other thing that people point out, though, and I do agree with this, is the return rate on the new RTs are just as much as some cheaper Android tablets. We've talked about that here on the show, too, that, you know, yeah, I bought a $99 Android tablet and I returned it because, like anything else, it was a $99 Android tablet in quality. You know, sometimes cheaper is not always better. So,
and in this case, it's not cheaper,
not at all.
I mean, you have to wonder about just how right this guy was in the next article that we have here. And his question is Windows 8 a bad OS for tablets? And he has written at least two articles, the first of which said, oh yeah, Windows 8 is really bad for tablets. Blanket statement, this is just a horrible operating system. It doesn't translate well to tablets, blah, blah, blah. And a lot of people disagreed with him. So he took a second look at this. And this is the article that we have in the show notes. And he went through and tried to make this as objective as possible. What he found, interestingly enough, was that objectively, it's not bad. It compares pretty favorably to iOS is what he was really concentrating on in the comparison. So it wasn't bad objectively, but subjectively, he still hates it. So there's... I'm
hating this, but for the right reasons, not the wrong ones.
Exactly.
It still bites. I'm sorry.
It just really seems that if Windows was going to kind of do this paradigm switch from software to a little bit more hardware-centered or from traditional computing to touch-centered, that they would have done a bit more research, a bit more homework to find out what people liked and what they would use, because they obviously expected that this would make a huge splash. And I suppose it has, but not necessarily in the positive way that they are looking for.
Exactly. The Surface Pro is coming out, and that's going to be available for, I believe it's starting at $799. Is that right?
Yeah, about as much as a 128 gig iPad.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll get there in a bit. But let's continue complaining about the Surface.
The Surface.
Before we get there. Yeah.
Well, others are complaining about it. I don't know that I would complain about it. This doesn't surprise me at all. The 64 GB version of the Surface has maybe 23 GB usable, because what it's come out to be is about 41 GB is used by the operating system. And it's a recovery partition.
Well,
here's my thing. I mean, I do agree. I'm not disagreeing here. But there are two things that I think we kind of have to realize is that the recovery partition is on this, And you can actually back everything up. And we know Windows. Unfortunately, this is still Windows when you get right down to it. So to be able to recover this in the field or recover your data is not something that you have on, say, Android or iOS. You would have to go back to, you know, an update that you've done in iTunes or, you know, restore everything in your apps and maybe not data from iCloud. And then Android, you have to either root whatever device it is or find a different way to be able to get some of that back or clone your drive, which a lot of people do. So you have not as many operating systems give you the ability to restore that information when you're in the field. And this would. The other side is, too, you can actually still port things off. You like any tablet, you can get the data off of there. Certainly, it's a little easier on Android than it is on iTunes with iOS. But you can do so. And in some of the models, you still have the ability of extra storage. Slap in a gigantic SD card or some other memory card device. Even Android devices have started to stop supporting cards and card readers. So there is some upside to this. And it's just easier to go for the link bait. And it's easier to pick up the stick and bash a very expensive device for not having some of this available to it.
I still can't buy this for a couple of reasons, the first of which is that, yes, you can plug in extra storage, but it's extra storage that you have to pay for. And with a device that's already priced pretty steeply, that is something that I think users are going to have a hard time swallowing. And the second issue is that I think they could be a little smarter about recovery partitions. I understand why they want to put it on the device. But at the same time, just as you could plug in a memory card or a storage device, you can also plug in a USB device, which presumably you could make the device boot from and have a recovery stick rather than taking up so much room on this very expensive tablet that you've just purchased just to be able to recover it easily without another device present. So I do understand the anger here. And with other devices like Android and iOS, the OS is considerably smaller. And I think that if Microsoft has decided, as Lisa was talking about earlier, if they've decided to make this paradigm shift, and we'll just start using a lot of corporate buzzwords here, but if they've chosen to do that and they want to be a part of the tablet market, the OS has to follow suit, meaning that you have to be a little more conservative about the resources that you use, whether it's how do your apps drain the battery on a tablet, how much room does your OS take up, that kind of thing. So there are things I don't think Microsoft has thought through completely here.
Okay, Lisa, you've heard both sides of this. You've heard that, you know, these devices are in this way, these devices are in that way. But if you had a full desktop operating system on a tablet, would you expect to give up a whole lot? Would you help us decide here, but weigh in.
Well, okay, it's a matter of perspective. Giving up 40-some GB is not bad. Giving up about 60% of the memory on your device, I just feel like shame on them. With the falling costs of memory, as Ricky said, there are other ways that they could have handled the whole backup. But to have it on the tablet so that you don't really have that option, you don't have that choice, just shows a lack of caring on their part. I think it would be very interesting and a bit amusing if legally it was required that capacity was not listed, as in this is a 64 gigabyte tablet, but free usable space was listed.
Actually, Microsoft has gotten in trouble for that already. And EU regulators made them start putting that on the website and on the back of the box even. It's just not openly talked about.
23 gigabytes just doesn't sound that flashy.
No, it doesn't.
Well, but this is why Apple is looking at a 128 GB iPad, because now they're moving into the realm of ultrabooks. Now they're moving into the realm of actually going after some of these devices, because for years, and this is so weird, this is kind of counter Apple in a way, Steve Jobs has said it doesn't matter how much memory is on there. You don't need to own everything. It's all up in the cloud. That's why iTunes Match and all made a lot of sense, because his philosophy was that everything would be streaming and you wouldn't own these things. You would just, you know that they're there in this great big library. But what we've come to find out is people really do want to have that kind of stuff if they're creating music, if they're creating video especially. We've talked about how people are using iPads to record video or take pictures. And so being able to store that stuff on the device and then upload it later when you're in a situation where you're not under a bandwidth cap or something like that, Apple's responded and released a 128 GB iPad starting at $799. And I actually like this idea. I think it makes a lot of sense. I know there's some detractors out there on the net about this, but I actually like this idea.
I don't know. I guess maybe I'm in the mood to argue today. Or maybe you're just wrong all the way around. No, I don't hate this idea, but it seems very strange to me. First of all, the release was just weird. It's like, hi, it's the middle of the week. Here's a new tablet. Thanks, bye.
There's no press event. There was no big Apple hoopla. It was like, when I first heard it, I thought, well, that's a rumor, because if it weren't a rumor, there would be this huge Apple event and an announcement, and there wasn't.
No, there wasn't. And I do agree with you about people who are creating video and creating music. They need a little more space. But how much of the market is that? I think for most people, streaming is becoming a much more popular way to do things, and having things in the cloud is being embraced by a lot of people. And so it seemed very counter, you're right, to the way Apple generally does things. And as I said, just strange release. Hi, here's your new iPad. Bye-bye. You know, no, this is why you want to buy it. This is why you want this thing. Yeah, go get it.
If you're going to the Retina style stuff, that stuff gets bigger. Remember when they first released the Retina stuff and apps went up by 5-6% at first, and now some of these apps, when they go universal to be both iPhone and iPad Retina friendly, they can jump up by 30%. And so apps themselves have gotten bigger. And if Apple is to break out of certain molds and say get into being the replacement for your Game Boy or your PlayStation Portable, then they need larger files. Some of the game files that I have from just simple games like Final Fantasy, which is an old game, but is almost half a gig. So these apps themselves are bloated, especially when you get into gaming or things outside of direct productivity. You know, if it's Pages or Keynote, I don't think that's going to be as huge unless you do a lot of those. But if you're going to do something in GarageBand or, you know, something through Final Cut, these could be heavy, heavy files.
I guess time will tell, and I've been wrong every other time I've said something Apple did didn't make sense. What? They're releasing an iPad mini with specs similar to the iPad 2? Nobody's going to buy that, except they did. So we shall see. If you've already bought an Apple device, specifically... Well, I guess any Apple device, really.
Well, minus the iPad 1 and a couple older gen iPods. Yes, you might already be using iOS 6.1. In fact, there's a word that after 36 hours of the release of the latest version of iOS, 1/4 the community of iDevices already have it.
Yep, there have been some improvements. I think you get the general bug fixes thing. You can now purchase movie tickets through Fandango. That's only in the U.S. though. They have more LTE carrier support and a few other random things. So if you haven't gotten that, you might as well go and grab it now that people are not stampeding the servers. If you have an Apple TV, you'll want to update that to the latest, which is version 5.2. There have been some accessibility improvements, namely the grid layout makes a little more sense now. VoiceOver is going to distinguish between the rows on the grid and give you a better idea of what's what. There's another improvement that's been around actually since 5.1, and that is you can easily turn VoiceOver on and off, and this makes things really great for households that have people who need accessibility and people who don't.
And Bluetooth keyboard support, which is awesome.
Yes, that sounds very cool. I mean, it sounds like it would just be really convenient. I don't have an Apple TV. I just don't watch enough of any TV, really, to make it worth it. But that sounded cool to me. It sounded like something that would just make the whole experience easier and would entice someone who was on the fence to get an Apple TV.
Kind of wanted one. Since Mountain Lion talks to it, I kind of like the idea. But I, for a long time, I didn't have a television with a good HDMI input, and that's really what you have to use it because there aren't too many ports on the back of it. There's a rumor going around that there's going to be an Apple TV refresh this year. So that's one of the other reasons why I haven't kind of dove in. Although the price is right, $99 for this little hobby of Apple's is pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of hobbies, I know all of us on this podcast really enjoy a good book, and lots of you out there do as well. But the delivery method for that is changing a lot. Barnes & Noble actually is going to eliminate 30% of its stores. So for those of you who would buy hardback books or paperbacks and scan them, or if you just like going into the store, which I actually do like doing this, going into the store with the smell of books and there's coffee in there and there's just this, the energy in the place is bibliophile energy. Everybody's there to read something. That's not going to stick around for too much longer. Barnes & Noble understands that the delivery methods are different. People are reading ebooks rather than going in to browse through paper. I mean, Borders is already closed, and again, Barnes & Noble is planning to cut 30% of their stores.
It's kind of not surprising compared to, say, the UK closing down some of their retail stores just recently after the holiday break, and Best Buy actually sort of pulling out of Canada. They're closing down a lot of their stores as well. Amazon is ramping up. They have something like 90,000 employees now and 80 distribution centers. And of course, Walmart is doing, you know, fairly well for itself as well. It's just a change in habit, do we think? I mean, certainly more and more ebooks are being sold. Amazon says that they've actually sold more ebooks now than they have physical paper books. Maybe we flipped a trend.
And I think it's also that you can shop and you can browse on your own time and in your own way. For example, if you are a mom, you can shop on Amazon or on Barnes & Noble in the middle of the night. And you can read book jacket information without having the kids pulling on you. You know, can I have a cookie or whatever?
Yep.
You can do that. As a blind person, I can read descriptions of books, whether they be audio, electronic, or actual hard copy print books, and I can decide, do I want this? And I don't have to even decide right then. So I can do that instead of feeling like I have to hurry and make a snap decision because I need to leave in 5 minutes to catch my bus or meet up with someone. So I think that there are a lot of reasons. I have no sense of smell, so I never got into the whole smell of books, but I don't know. I think bookstores have the most comfortable chairs in the world. I don't know what that's all about or where they got them. But
wow, you're right.
Someone needs to set up a business selling
this is not a lending
chairs.
Library, lady. You need to move along.
Minus the sticky lollipops, of course. That's never a fun feeling.
No sticky chairs. But yeah, they should do this. They should sell bookstore chairs.
See, it is harder to say than it sounds.
It is. They should sell bookstore chairs, and they should implement smell-o-vision on e-book readers so that it can smell like you're reading a real book, even if you're not.
Oh, great. Now it's going to be Amazon Kindle with smell cartridge. Thanks.
I already have the coffee cup holder on my computer. You know, press a little button.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, there's that. There's absolutely that. See, I think of coffee because so many bookstores have stuck in, you know, the pseudo coffee bar that I've gone to, you know, and unless you go to a great giant one like Books A Million in a big mall or something like that, I'm used to walking in and perusing the magazine section and having a strong urge for a white chocolate mocha or something. I think, you know, hanging out at the record store. I mean, we're just moving away from some of these, we used the term earlier, paradigm shift. you know, the way we consume media is different. I mean, appointment viewing is not the same anymore. You don't wait till Wednesday at 8 o'clock, or most people don't, to watch a program. A lot of people are using DVR, and look how freaked out the whole industry was about that. But, I mean, think of we were talking about this a little bit ago about BlackBerry. I couldn't imagine now a platform of any kind coming out and saying, hey, we got movies, we got music, we got it all. That just wasn't something you heard even 3 years ago. We sat there and said, oh, they didn't get Warner Brothers, or they didn't get Sony, or they didn't get Columbia, which is Sony. It's just really changed. People have gotten acceptant of how we consume media. I mean, a perfect example of that is the Disney Netflix situation, where Netflix has actually worked out the deal with Disney. That really, to me, would not have been heard of 3 years ago. It would have been just unfathomable. So media itself is changing. The way people are consuming media is changing. And the way we're going to be able to find the media is probably going to be the next thing that has to change.
Well, we've talked so much about books, but nobody has brought up a huge concern. And that is, what if these bookstores with the coffee bars close? What becomes of the barista alfinistas?
Oh, man, poor guys and girls and the lost ones. Pour out a latte, everybody.
And on that note, I think it's well past time for a break. Coming up after the break, we'll have AT News and a whole lot more here on Sarah Talk Podcast 140.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Cerotext DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Welcome back to Serotalk 140. And you know, we've talked a lot about new things on this podcast, new trends, new technology, new thoughts, and a lot about old books. But we also like to take a moment here and focus on something that we got new over here at Serotech. It's our brand new shiny website, serotech.com. I've mentioned it a little earlier, but honestly, it's a great thing because now you can actually get a lot of information about what we are and who we are and what we do. And that's not just Serotech. Serotalk has representation there too. SPN has its own link, and you can check that out at the brand new shiny website for serotech.com.
Also new on the network, you can check out episode 14 of Triple Click Home, the Apple podcast. And sadly, we have to say goodbye to one of the members of Triple Click Home. Pete Bosley has got a wonderful opportunity, but it means that he won't have time for us anymore. So sad. We will miss Peter, but if you didn't get enough of him on episode 14 of Triple Click Home, he does feature, as do we all, in the 2012 SPN Outtakes, now available on SPN. It's chock full of badness.
Scary stuff.
From every person who's ever appeared on SPN in the year 2012, you can hear the good, the bad, the ugly, and the musical, actually.
If we seem a little subdued today, it's because we've been scared serious, knowing that what we say can and probably will be used against us on the next outtakes. But they were a lot of fun for us to hear. And the reaction we're getting on social media is that others are also enjoying them quite a lot. So we do encourage you to check out all our latest offerings.
So there's this tiny little conference, well, maybe not so tiny, in sunny Orlando. The annual ATIA conference was going on between around January 28th and the 31st. Lots of news coming out of that, including some new Bookshare tools, the ability to read right in the browser without any downloads, and now you can organize your books into various and sundry bookshelves. You can have the school bookshelf, the trashy romance bookshelf, and whatever your little heart desires.
I played with this a bit, And I could see this really working for students who would need to go in and, let's say, read chapter 12 for civics homework. But as someone who's reading a novel, it was a little disconcerting because I couldn't stop and start and come back in and easily find my place. I had to choose a chapter. I had to do a search for where I wanted to be and hopefully find the information. As I said, I think this is something that students will use more. Also, I feel like I'm in front of the computer enough that for me, reading in front of the computer is not necessarily a desirable thing, but I think it's pretty neat that you can categorize books that you are currently reading to make the process of finding them a bit easier.
Exactly. If you are a BookSense owner, you're going to want to download version 3.0 of the BookSense firmware released at ATIA. A couple of new things added there, support for additional document types, and you can now search through text content and a whole lot of other good nifty things in that package. Get the link in the show notes for where to download that. This is available for both the standard and XT models of the BookSense. And HIMSS didn't stop there. They also have introduced promotional pricing. This goes through June 30th. You're going to get $400 off your BrailleSense U2 or the U2 QWERTY model of this note taker. HumanWare had a pretty big announcement at ATIA as well. They are bringing us the brand new version of the Victor Reader Stream. If you want to check out the press release, you can look at our show notes. Also, there's a link there to an interview with Matthew Janusauskas, the product manager for the Victor, and Brian Hartgen conducts that interview, so check that out. If you're ready to do some note-taking on your iPhone, check out the AFB's Access Note app for the iPhone. That is now available.
This was one of those apps that there was a lot of buzz about, and this, along with our next story, to me anyway, really brings home the idea that there is not one app for all. As blind people, we have more options now than we ever have before, and so the idea of everyone having to use the same app or apps is kind of silly and not very realistic. For me, I have ways that I already use to take notes on my iDevice and to get information from one place to another. But if I were a student or my main means of communication had been through using a note taker, this is something that I think would have been helpful to me. This was not an app that I played with directly, but in reading the description, I just don't use a Bluetooth keyboard enough to make it worth it. I use a Bluetooth keyboard, for example, when I'm playing iAssociate sometimes, or doing some such thing like that, where obviously the Access Note app is not trained to go, but it does offer a lot of functionality in that it does work with Bluetooth keyboards as well as Braille displays. And it will be interesting to see what features they bring to this as time goes by. The comments I've seen from people who have it and use it are that they are happy with it and it is a good initial start and they would like to see additions and improvements. And speaking of a good initial start, another long-awaited app was launched this week, and that is the Braille Touch app. Anybody play with this one?
I haven't yet. The app itself is free, so you can get it and kind of practice what it's like to write in Braille on your iPhone. Then you will need to do some in-app purchases to enable functionality like copying to the clipboard, emailing, messaging, that kind of thing. This is, I think, a great start, at least from the description, although we're only looking at American Grade 1 Braille at this point. And I suspect that will change over time once people become accustomed to this and the developers, of course, see how successful the app is. That's going to determine whether they continue, you know, hardcore development on it or what have you. But I like the idea of being able to have the phone in landscape mode, and you've got three fingers on one side, three fingers on the other, and you just start inputting your information in Braille. A lot of the feedback has been that for those who are testing the application, they get around between 20 and 30 words per minute in terms of input speed.
Yeah, I didn't find it was quite that fast. Now, some of that is because I was just getting started, but it seemed very odd to me to hold the phone in the position that I needed to, with the screen away from me, which I understand why they needed to do it, but it just seems like you're asking to drop it right on its face or something.
Okay, this is actually a very interesting topic to me. We often get into the conversation of why some devices cannot be the universal devices. It cannot do absolutely positively everything and anything. And I'm sort of in that mode with Braille input because of the nature of cording and stuff like that. I mean, you'd have to set it on the table. Didn't you find? I mean, or
no?
Because I don't know.
No, you're supposed
could do
to
that.
Hold it, and they suggest that you have a case so that it doesn't slip.
Because findings found out that they broke several iPhones in testing, I'm sure.
Possibly. My first beef is when you read the documentation, they refer to quite a lot the special way to hold the phone. And it just made it sound already like we're really different.
No, it's sounding like limitations of device and multi-touch and the ability to do what's normal. Now, I mean, okay. Look, abacuses existed before we had talking calculators, but it's kind of hard to let go. And this isn't something that's unique to us. This is always every time anybody ever says, I'm tired of the 104 keyboard. It's time we should revamp it. We've been living in the same way since 1870-something with the keyboard. And every keyboard alternative that I have tried for QWERTY sucks. So I'm not surprised by this. But it's interesting. Because I think they're just physical limitations to some of these things. It's the same way that some people say that they would rather do text input on a Bluetooth keyboard than try to use the software keyboard or Flexi.
Yeah, the one thing where I think this could be useful is, well, first of all, I've made no secret of it that I really am a big fan of Flexi, but it has its limitations. And the biggest one is if you're in a very crowded area, you can't always hear the word that you've typed. So what you end up with is conceivably totally different than what you meant to say. And one nice thing with an app like Braille Touch is that you are typing and you can be pretty sure that what you've typed is what you meant. And if it's not, you're only off by one letter. I had problems with the way that you hold the phone for a couple reasons. One is that if I did it with wearing headphones, I always felt like I was fighting for space with my hand and the earphone plug.
Yeah.
And the other was, after I did it for about 5 minutes, holding it that way kind of hurt my hands. It's like my wrists started to ache. It's not like it was heavy. I think for me, it's a carpal tunnel thing. But it's also a wrap my head around it, because if, for example, you're typing the letter F, you know, you're using the two fingers on your left hand, the index and middle finger on your left hand, and you're using the index finger on your right hand. But because it's kind of upside down and backward, you don't feel like you're typing the F. You feel like you're typing the H. At least I did. So I had, especially at the beginning, quite a lot of letter reversals. It's one of those, I think this is an interesting app, and there are a lot of people who like it. For me personally, no. Plus, I was a lot slower on it than I was on Flexi. Now, granted, I've been using Flexi longer, but for example, I spent about half an hour with this. After half an hour with Flexi, I felt like I was considerably faster without the awkward positioning of the phone and the wrist pain.
Right, so, but we're talking about something that requires multi-touch gesture. You literally have to be cording in hitting multiple things at one time versus QWERTY 104 philosophy, which is single touch, single entry. So I can see how that's just difficult. I wonder though, would you have the same headphone issue if you were using an older Apple device? I mean, both you guys are on fives now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, you would, because you're holding the phone in landscape and you're holding it with both hands and each hand is at an end. So regardless of where the headphone jack is, you would still have an issue. And they were talking about using a headphone where the physical jack was, I forget how they put it, it's worded better than I am saying it. It's kind of an L-shaped thing so that,
right.
But still, I think the same problem would be there because, you know, you need that room for your hand and it needs it for the headphone. And
yeah, it's sticking out there.
Yeah.
It is great to have choices, though.
It's also neat that they thought about all that and put it into documentation. I mean, they recognize the limitations, too, which is awesome, you know, because together as a community, we might be able to solve these problems.
And we'd love to know what you do think about this. If you've tried Braille Touch, give us a comment at resources@saratalk.com. Send us an iReport through your Android or iOS device, or you can comment on the blog at sarotalk.com. Let us know how you feel.
You know, what also needs to happen as a community is for us to be civil and kind, and I'm putting myself in this, so don't think I'm singling anyone out that's listening. No, my own bad self needs to be good, because Facebook has now started an Access Twitter feed and is going to sponsor some of the events at CSUN. Facebook seems to be coming around to looking at more Facebook accessibility, and rather than us all go beat up on Facebook, if they're being nice and they really want to know, I think we should communicate with them in a civil manner, which I admit, once again, has not been my way of discoursing about Facebook on this particular program. But be that as it may, Facebook is on Twitter, FB Access, and I think we should all be nice and actually provide some really good things because we all do want that to change. And certainly Facebook itself is starting to get more into this with mobile. There was a study that just recently came out that said that Facebook is actually now 50% and growing on the people that access it through mobile apps. So it's important that we be able to give them that information, not just through the desktop, but also through mobile, because it seems to be where they're going and how we're accessing Facebook.
If you're planning to take a public tour of the White House, you're going to have the opportunity to have audio description accompanying that tour. This is pretty cool. I took a trip to Washington, D.C. as part of the marching band in high school. We toured the White House, and there was no audio description, at least not any professional audio description. So it might be interesting to go back and see what kinds of things are said with this. And speaking of description of images and the like, Chris Nesterud has developed a service that will provide detailed image descriptions. So this is not a product identification service, and this is not a CAPTCHA-solving service. Rather, it is a chance to submit an image, whether it's, say, a picture of a dress or a pair of shoes or what have you, or just a snapshot taken of your surroundings, or perhaps you're on the steps of a famous building or something like that. You can send this image to Chris's service, and we have the link in the show notes for that. And you can pay for as many, or you can pay for several descriptions, and the price changes depending on how many you'd like, but you're going to get at least a 250-word description from several different perspectives about your image. And I really, really like this idea, because often if you are getting something described, it may be only by one person, or it may be by more than one person, but each of them is biased in some way. And this allows you to get image descriptions from people who have no vested interest in what you think about this image. You know, they can say, that dress is horrible, and it might have been your wedding dress or something, but at least you know.
Yeah. I saw this in action the other night because Blind Bargains used the service to get and post a description of the new Victor Stream. And they were describing the lettering and the colors. And it was all very kind of objectively done. It was
Or subjectively done, because it was by different people. I put myself in that category. I'm not just visually impaired, I'm style impaired. So I often get the opinions of others on what I look like or what I dress like. Being that I was in radio also, because I dressed in t-shirts and blue jeans, and that was kind of the standard uniform of the time. So when I worked into more retail and business world, I could use that. Oh my gosh, I could actually use that of, is this stripey? Is this plaidy? Does this kind of sort of all work together? You know, we've mentioned a description and we've mentioned audio players. Just as a reminder, you actually can use the new Victor Reader Stream, the BookSense, and other players like that with the System Access Mobile Network. System Access Mobile Network has information and has descriptions of programs and all sorts of neat things. You know, Jamie just posted the inauguration for the president actually on the site, so you want to go check that out. If you haven't actually played with System Access, or if you haven't actually played with SAMnet, you can actually go and get a trial at www.satogo.com. That's www.satogo.com to be able to play with that as a trial, even on your iPhone. That's right. If you haven't already updated to the latest version of iBlink, iBlink Radio has the ability to connect to the System Access Mobile Network and read your documents through DocuScan Plus. Coming up after the break, we have your mailbag, and we're going to find out about cruises. No, Jamie is not on a cruise. Jamie's feeling pretty ill, but he has talked about cruises before. He has taken a cruise, and we've got a story about a cruise that's going to be very interesting as well. All that and more here on Sero Talk.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. Other groundbreaking ideas from that time, the whalebone corset, the pedal-operated submarine, and the two-story outhouse. We've come a long way since then. It's time our light bulbs did the same. Visit energysavers.gov and learn about energy-saving light bulbs. See, these new bulbs are more efficient than the old ones, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. They last longer, too. Like how we humans last longer now that doctors use antibiotics instead of leeches. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age of aeroplanes and moving pictures, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sero Talk 140, and now it's time for Mailbag. You know, people were quiet. I have the sneaking suspicion they're still laughing at us and our outtakes. But we did have some responses, and we are anxious to share those with you.
First up, we've got one from Mike Arrigo, and he's chiming in on the discussion about unlocked versus locked phones. And he basically says that he's not sure how many consumers really know what this means to have an unlocked phone either. Whenever he mentions it, most people don't really get it. But he says they should do their research more because the benefits to having an unlocked phone are many. And having the decision to keep a phone locked or unlock it, having that decision resting with the carrier is problematic because there's no law that says they have to unlock the phone if you ask them to. So that is indeed a little bit disturbing. He also says he agrees with me about the Google NFC chip idea and how having this replace your password with something that you've got to have on your person could be a little bit scary. Next up, we had a message from Ben in California, and he is advising us to check out the Prismo OCR app for the iPhone if you don't have that already. And I believe that the price has dropped. This app used to be $9.99 at one point, I think, and that price has dropped. So do a search for Prismo in the App Store, and you can grab that for your iOS device. Last, we had a comment on the blog from Sue, and she is talking about floppy disks. Jamie was talking recently about still having some information on floppy disks, and, you know, what do you do to access that stuff or bring it over somewhere else or what have you? And Sue talks about just a little simple USB external floppy disk drive that you can get for around 10 bucks. And you just plug it right in and it works immediately. And then you can start accessing all that lovely and or scary info you've got on your 3.5-inch floppy disks.
That falls into the fun category of stuff you didn't know they even made. But
exactly.
If you do have a lot of information, that would be certainly a way to get it.
It's time now for Roundabout. This first story is a great one, and I didn't catch this when it aired, so I'm looking forward to watching it. Maybe one of you have seen this on Nickelodeon. There was a special called Out of Sight, and it was basically having to do with how blind kids see the world. And what they did was they talked with several blind kids from around the U.S., and they have a fairly large age range, but it's just a video showing how the kids do what they do in class. And of course, we hear from the kids themselves about what it feels like for them in particular to be blind. Some of them are losing vision, or some of them were born blind. And so they each come from kind of a different perspective. Have either of you seen this one yet?
I did. I grabbed it as a podcast, and I thought it was kind of neat. I mean, they seemed like very normal kids. I would have liked, personally, some description of some of what was going on. I was curious, for example, if any of the kids shown had secondary disabilities. One or two had slightly impeded speech, so I guess that's what brought that up in my mind. I was curious, too, not that it really affected the story, but I was curious also if there was any kind of racial diversity, various cultures kind of being portrayed. But it was good, and I think this would be well received by sighted kids who maybe had questions. I mean, it took an honest look at differences, but I don't think that the theme that people walked away with was pity or, oh, how inspiring. It to me, just gave the overall impression of these are kids just like any kids.
That sounds excellent, and I'm really looking forward to it, because it sounds like it was done in such a way where, yes, the differences could be seen, but the sameness was obvious as well. You know, these are kids, bottom line, and these are kids who happen to be blind. So they got to explore kind of ways in which they were different, but that wasn't even necessarily the highlight of the program. So again, I'm really looking forward to watching this.
The Nick News stuff has usually been really good. Linda Ellerbe, who I was a big fan of at ABC News, I still think promotes and produces most of that stuff. And I've seen some of the other Nick News TV stories on other disabilities. They've been pretty fair and even-handed and very informative. Twitter has responded very well to this. So I will probably have to do what Lisa did, is find it through iTunes and watch it, because I've seen lots of really good information there. Reading Rainbow also has a free one out there that we've talked about on EOL, End of Line, which is also good. It's the history of Reading Rainbow, and disabilities are represented in that one too.
Yeah, and when I saw this on Twitter, I saw that it was available on iTunes, and I mistakenly went to iTunes and tried to find it that way. And that was a bit of a nightmare. So what I ended up doing was just bringing up the Downcast app and searching for it as a podcast. I found the episode which temporarily subscribed me to the podcast. And then, of course, once you've listened, you have the option to keep that or to delete that feed. But that was probably the easiest way to find it.
In our next story, I want to go test this out myself. I don't know about you guys, but I want to go see if the experiences described in this blog are accurate. And the article is about the experience of a guide dog and his owner on their first cruise. Oh, I want to go on one so badly.
Somewhere warm.
Yes. In the description of this, it was very positive. It answered one of the questions that I had about cruising. He basically said that he decided to go on the cruise, and he contacted his travel agent, and they were able to, you know, let the ship know that a guide dog would be traveling, and they had a sign on his door indicating that a guide dog was inside. I'm not sure why that was exactly, but the question that it answered was, where does the dog relieve on the ship? And the answer is that they put together a box with, you know, wood shavings, and they put it out of the way so it's not like right in the path of everybody, but it's still easy to get to. So that was really cool. I did have another question, and maybe I'm the only one who wonders about this, but what part does the inner ear play for a dog's balance? So essentially, can they get seasick?
On larger ships, it's hard to get seasick. I'm not saying it's not impossible, but it's harder to. But that's a really good question, because one of the ships that I've done, the Carnival Magic, which I've talked about on the podcast last year, I adored. And if you were midship, you didn't really feel it at all. But, you know, there's some other things too, because a lot of it's metal flooring and stuff. And if your service animal has never had experience on certain types of things like that, or if you're a smaller ship, you're going to notice more pitch and yaw. And so I wonder if that'll actually be a problem too, because I know dogs just love to ride in cars.
I have friends who took their guide dogs on a cruise, and they said that their dogs didn't have any difficulty at all with balance. Apparently, when they stepped off the ship and onto land, someone told them that for just a split second, the dog had a funny, I feel the earth move under my feet kind of look on its face.
Yeah.
And ironically, when the crew on this particular cruise line had built a place for dogs to relieve themselves, they put it in an out-of-the-way place, but everyone loved the humor because it ended up being on the poop deck.
So, nice.
Yeah.
Very appropriate. Or not, as the case may be. And finally, our last story talks about staying in touch with the home front. What do you do as a military person if you are stationed very far from your family? How do you keep up with them? What is it like? And this article, I think I find most roundabout stories fascinating, but this one certainly was, because it talks about what things were like way before now. You know, one of the people in the article was talking to a person who had served in World War II in the Navy. And as he was describing, oh, yes, we do video chats and we have email and blah, blah, blah. And this person was just flabbergasted by the idea, because when he was in the Navy, sometimes you could be too far out to even be able to send mail. You might arrive in a port a month later and there'd be a whole bunch of mail waiting for you. You'd have your family at home, and because you couldn't send letters very often, they might go for months at a time, not really knowing what your status was. And things are much, much different now.
Yeah. And I mean, I knew how slow things were with any kind of correspondence during the First and Second World Wars, for example. But I thought it was interesting hearing about the men who had been on consecutive or fairly consecutive tours of duty and how things changed within the space of just a few years. I was really touched by the story of the father who was afraid that his little daughter wouldn't know him. And because of video chat, when he got home, you know, she knew exactly who he was. And it's not quite the same, but at least there is somewhat of a relationship that is built or maintained. This was just very cool. It's another one of those times where I think we realize how fortunate we are to have the technology that we do.
And if you're curious about what technology they use, you know, you'd think it would be all the super secure, classified, all that stuff. And they do have servers for that, where they encrypt the communication that is classified, and it can't be wireless or anything like that. But for the, you know, sending messages home to family and talking to them and possibly even video chatting if the bandwidth is good enough, they use everybody's favorite, Skype.
I knew we couldn't make it through without saying it at least once.
At least once. And I think that's going to put the wrap on Sarah Talk 140. I want to thank everybody for joining us this week. We would love to hear from you. Let us know what you think about the stories that we've covered this time. Send us an iReport through your Android or iOS device. Head on over to the blog at sarotalk.com and give us a comment. Send us an email, resources@sarotalk.com, or you can call the Blab line, 866-997-2522. Thanks again for joining us, and have a great week, everyone.
You've been listening to Sarah Talk. Visit us at www.sarotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@sarotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life. Thank you.